You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, it looks like Nancy Pelosi finally got around to bringing the articles of impeachment into the Senate.
She did. And there's a lot of theories, and we've talked about a few, of why she held on to those articles for so long. And I heard a new one today that I thought was pretty intriguing, and it makes sense to me.
What is it?
Well, as you know, the senators now have to be there for the proceedings, right?
That's correct.
So they have to be
That's correct.
Well, we also have an election coming up, or at least a...
You've got the Iowa caucus, right? Where the first time people actually get to vote
exactly.
for who they would like to see become president.
So where would all the candidates be right now and in the next week or so? Where would they be?
Well, they'd all be in Iowa.
Well,
including all the senators.
And now four of them that cannot be there. And that's Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, Michael Bennett, and Elizabeth Warren. They will not be able to go campaign in Iowa. But who will be able to campaign?
Well, Joe Biden, because he's neither the vice president anymore, nor is he a senator.
So the theory that was floated that I heard was that she held on to these partially because Joe Biden is her guy and her candidate. And in order to help him, she held on till it was close enough to the Iowa caucus so that these people can't go campaign and it will give him an edge there.
Well, you know what? That's a pretty cool idea. I have to admit, I wouldn't have thought about it. But, you know, it's interesting because now the senators, and they've been sworn in by the Chief Justice, John Roberts, they become the triers of fact. So, in other words, they become the jury.
Yes.
Now, one of the things, Linda, that I wanted to discuss is now that the senators and the ones you just brought up, okay, who are also presidential candidates.
Yes.
Because they're the trier of fact, we had better not hear one word from them or their surrogates, underlining the word surrogates, about President Trump. Not one word. Because if they criticize President Trump during the impeachment hearing where they are a juror, that shows confirmation bias.
Well, but okay? We already know that they're biased.
Well, would it not be the same?
Of course.
Okay, would it not be the same as if this was a criminal proceeding with a jury or a civil proceeding with a jury and a juror after court was making comments about the defendant in the case? They would be kicked right out of that jury. And by the way, the attorney who would represent the defendant would ask that the case be dismissed, a mistrial.
Well, and I understand that, but you have to remember that this trial is not the same as a criminal or a civil trial. There's similarities, but it's not the same, and it's not handled in the same way. So I don't know. I mean, certainly good ethics and good common sense would lead you to believe that they wouldn't do that. But, you know, here's the thing about this whole episode. There's so much talking heads, you know, talking right now. And you hear, you know, oh, he's going to get convicted or he's going to get thrown out. You hear, oh, they don't have a case. You know, what are the regular people to think? Because you can never really get a straight story from anybody. And I would like to sit here and say to you that, you know, in my opinion, there's no there. He's totally going to get off. We're going to have him reelected. I don't trust the system, though. I just don't trust that people will make the right decisions about if they call witnesses, if they don't call witnesses. My vote would be call no witnesses. My vote would be that they have, you know, made their bed, make them lie in it, because they were the ones who were supposed to do the investigating. So that's where it should stay. It should never go to the Senate and have them start reinvestigating and opening up new cans of worms for everybody. So I don't want to see that, but I don't trust our system right now.
Well, you know, I'm glad to hear you talk like that, because you know what it shows? It shows that you and I got taught civics in school. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is like what they don't teach in school anymore.
Yeah.
So you and I get it. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I think Americans who don't understand anything about this impeachment process and really don't understand how government works, they need to, I'm going to just keep it simple, stupid for them. Okay. The best analogy is that, as we've talked about before, is that what the Congress had was the preliminary hearing to determine whether there was probable cause to believe that Donald Trump should be bound over for trial. Okay, so bill or no bill, right? Indict or no indictment. And that's what the impeachment is, okay? So they voted to indict. Okay, so they billed the president. I'm trying to use as many analogous words as I can think of.
Right.
But I absolutely agree with you 100%. Their hour is gone. They had all the opportunities in the world to gather the evidence. They had a really long time to do this. I mean, I thought it was an inordinate amount of time, and to bring witnesses forward. And they chose not to. The witnesses they brought forward weren't worth a darn, because they weren't even hearing witnesses. They were hearsay witnesses that would have never been accepted in a court, in a real court of law, okay, in a criminal or a civil court of law, because you can't use hearsay evidence. And so it was assumptions, perceptions, beliefs, it was speculation. There was not a single objective fact that was submitted, okay? And so that's why this should be over.
Well, you're exactly right, Ron. The job of the Senate is simply to vote. It's not to retry the case. It's not to call witnesses. It's simply to vote. But what we have is we have some Democrats who want certain people to testify. We have some Republicans who want certain other people to testify. Nancy has picked seven people from the Congress to try the case.
Be the managers.
And President Trump's team has four attorneys involved. Mm-hmm. So we're going to hear first from the Democratic side.
Right, because they have to lay their case down again.
Right, and then we'll hear the rebuttal, and then we'll see where we're at. So it's going to be interesting in the coming couple of weeks where we're at.
Well, you know, I thought it was very interesting on the people that she selected. Okay, because they were absolute Kool-Aid drinkers.
Oh, absolutely.
Every single one of them. There was not a learned person there. There was not a person that had an independent thought in their head. These were all never-Trumpers and Trump haters. And, you know, I thought it was remarkable, although anticipated the type of people, the Nadlers and the people like that,
sure,
that she chose.
It has to be that group that started all this. But you know what's so funny is that they just had a couple of contestants on Jeopardy. And one of their questions was, who is this person?
Oh, and they showed a picture of Adam Schiff, right?
And nobody knew who he was.
And that was a $13,000 question, too.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, and I want to talk a little bit more later maybe about it if you and I have some time. But, I just returned from an event, and at that event there was 16,000 people. And honestly, there was no conversation in any thing that I participated in, not in any restaurant, not in any food court, not in any...
Like when you guys are having drinks after cocktail parties.
Notice that I bring up the food first.
Like yeah.
not in walking through the showroom's floors, not in just chit-chatting with people. There was zero conversation about this at all. There was a lot of great conversation about the economy and things. I want to say one more thing that you're going to, if you haven't heard it, you're going to laugh. Actually, it's not funny. I think it's disgusting. But Nancy Pelosi made herself some promotional products. And of course, that's my business, right?
Okay. And I'm ready to talk about that okay. Because I'm glad you brought it up, because you're the very person I wanted to discuss this with.
I would never do it for her. If she were to give me an order like that, I would turn it down.
Wait a minute, but let's talk about what it is, because there's context to it.
Right. Okay. So there is a pen that has a particular look when you sign the impeachment book that you are taking the oath.
And it's a gold color, gold plating, black. Right.
Yeah. And so she had a number of those made up with her name engraved on them. And was giving them out, you know, like gloating. And she also did giggle and gloat that President Trump is impeached forever. I think that is disgusting. We talk about this being solemn. Are you just kidding?
Okay, so I'm glad you brought it up. You actually stole my thunder, okay? Because I was going to talk to you about this. But I want to talk. I've got a little different spin on it, okay? Mine's more of a forensic spin, okay? So... And you're the perfect person. So, Linda, for that pen, how long does it take from the day you order that pen to the person getting the pen? Okay, so just tell me what's the process. I know you sell millions and millions of pens.
Well, that's a good question.
There's a reason for it.
Okay, so she would have, it seems to me, that wherever they get the original pen that they use, because I would say that pen is not necessarily a normal promotional product, but it could be.
It's a signature pen.
It's a signature pen.
Right.
So like a Cross or a Schaefer or a Waterman or one of those pens, it's a nice pen. So if she gave out a replica of that, then it would take some time and you'd have huge minimums and you'd spend a lot of money. But if she got just, you know, like 50 or 25 more of the other one, all she had to do is just buy it from the place who would have had the pen on hand, and to get it engraved is just, you know, you can do it in an hour.
Okay. Well, the reason that I was thinking about this is because, first of all, it's disgusting that she did that.
Yes.
And the reason is, to me, as an investigator, it shows both confirmation and implicit bias. So the question to me was, I was thinking about making out a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request, with Nancy's office. They have 10 days to comply. It's a federal law. And my request would be, I want to see the invoice on the pens, because I want to know when she ordered those pens. I want to know if she ordered those pens before the Congress voted on the impeachment. Okay? That's what I would want to know, because to me, it would show evidence of confirmation and or implicit bias. And it just goes to the ego of these people.
My guess would be that she, in this time that she's been holding the papers, that's when she ordered them. After Congress voted, but before the Senate got them, that is when, I'm sure that's when she did it.
But wouldn't you think it would be important that if she ordered those pens before they even voted?
Well, even better, I'd like to know who paid for those pens. Did we pay for them?
Of course we paid for those pens.
Well, that's not right.
Well, I know that's not right. But anyway, do you see where I'm coming from with regards to this? And darn it, I thought you were going to say, well, you know, those pens are produced in China, and then they've got to come over here, and they don't put them on an airplane. They go on a ship. It's in a container, and it's going to take 2 months to get here.
No. No, she didn't order enough to... Now, if she could have a big order on order... And going to be selling, and probably somebody's probably thought of that and already has some on order.
Oh, and
they're
going to
be me though.
Well, but you know what? They're going to be commemorative impeachment pens, and I'll bet you the DNC and or Nancy Pelosi is selling them for big bucks on the campaign trail.
See,
right?
Because who wouldn't want to?
If you were a Kool-Aid drinker, who wouldn't want to buy one of those pens?
When he gets released from this whole thing, I'll make those pens and I'll say MAGA on there.
Donald Trump, MAGA.
Yes, that's it.
And send it to him. So I just thought that was, I thought that was pretty interesting. So what do you think now about the Attorney General's office and the new, and I forget his name, I apologize, but the new independent prosecutor is now looking at former FBI director James the Leaker Comey about, guess what, about leaking confidential documents dealing with Russia collusion. to the media through his surrogate, which was his law professor buddy.
So, right. Is that a surprise to you?
Oh, no. But you know, they looked at him the first time, but they're going right back and looking at him a second time. And so, you know, when President Trump says James Leaker Comey, he's not lying, okay? I mean, he's nailing it.
What's more interesting to me about this whole thing is actually what this is that they're investigating. So they're investigating the leak, but here's what I understand. And, you know, one of the reasons that I love not being a media person is because I can just put it in my own words and I don't have to try to be all politically correct about this. But there was a Russian website or Russian emails, and apparently that got hacked and they found these emails, and they had to do with this whole thing about Trump. And then the Dutch people came and
Dutch intelligence.
Yeah, and they got a hold of it and found.
Well, they hacked the Russians, okay? And that's how they got it.
Okay. So what I understand is that Dutch intelligence accessed, as you say, the documents on the Russian computers and gave them to the FBI. Well, what they found was that there was a discussion between Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Oh, yeah.
Who you always knew was dirty in
okay.
this.
Okay, from the DNC.
Yes, and she was the DNC National Committee chairwoman at that time. And Leonard Bernardo, who worked with George Soros.
Oh, and the Open Society.
Yes.
Boy, I wrote about that in my book, The Black Lives Matter, right? And the War on Police. George Soros involved in anything, that's dirty money. Okay.
Well,
and those are, you know, George Soros is absolutely a person that financially supports revolutionary causes all around the United States. He hates the police. He hates the rule of law. He's a convicted felon twice over. And this Open Society is a more of a secretive, you know, group that funnels money to all these radical causes.
Right. What Schultz told Bernardo is that Attorney General Loretta Lynch at the time, that she would ensure that Hillary Clinton never got prosecuted in the email probe.
And we all knew that because
we all knew
because
it,
when they met on the airplane
in
Phoenix Airport, okay?
So in my opinion, they're all dirty.
Oh, it's the deep state.
Yeah, and it's very frustrating. But this story just never dies, does it?
It doesn't. But, you know, keep looking at the players because the players are all part of the deep state. And they're all in it together, and that's so interesting that George Soros is somewhere behind the curtain manipulating the marionettes, and I've been saying that for the last couple of years.
He is, but what you also have to remember, Ron, is that these people that are attempting to impeach the president right now, there's a lot more behind this. This is not about this Ukrainian thing whatsoever.
No, not
this
at all.
This is about that they want these investigations to stop. And they're not going to stop while William Barr and President Trump are in there. And that is their fear. They want to get them out.
Well, and I'm telling you, you know, I want William Barr to keep moving forward with these investigations. I want the new special prosecutor to keep moving forward with these investigations. Mueller's investigation was idiotic. Horowitz's investigation was lackluster and mediocre. I hope people do not get caught up with the mystique of federal investigators because I have always found them to be quite mediocre.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
You know, I've been seeing a lot in the news lately about illegal immigrants who had ICE holds on them and were released anyway, and ICE was not allowed to pick them up and get them deported, and they reoffend in just horrible ways on American citizens. And it's very easy to Google on the internet, and also there's a site, Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR is what it's called, that you can actually look up crimes that are committed by illegals that have been released. And the thing is, Ron, it's really increasing a lot, and I find it really disturbing.
Well, you know, first of all, the FAIR, you know, the acronym for the organization that you mentioned, is a nonprofit, and they use vetted United States Department of Justice and Federal Bureau of Investigations and Department Federal Bureau of Prisons statistics. So those are good statistics. They're very valid. One of the problems that we have with undocumented aliens, illegal aliens, and then aliens that are from other countries that are here in the United States on visa, is that they represent a very small percentage of the overall population in the United States. However, they commit an inordinate amount of crime.
Yes.
In a variety of you know, different types of crimes, drug sales, drug possessions, burglaries, robberies, homicides, their sexual assaults, sex trafficking. Their statistics just completely overwhelm the United States citizen population. Now, the progressive left tries to hide that. They, you know, they say it isn't true. Just like they say, oh, we only have about, you know, 11 million illegal aliens. When I think the more properly vetted statistics are, we have about 29 million, actually over 29 million illegal aliens in the United States right now, and they cost us billions of dollars every year. And so the crime statistics are skewed in the favor of the illegal aliens. What do I mean by that? I mean, like I said, they create an inordinate amount of crime, and you just can't try to cover that up. And the statistics now are finally coming out, because during the Obama administration, they hid those statistics. Okay, they hid them. They hid them from researchers like myself. And when I was doing some writing about articles like this about illegal alien crime, I can't tell you how difficult it was for me to get the vetted sources, because they hide them. And then the Congress and even the Senate do things through legislation that continues to hide the statistics on what we call the UCR. In other words, the Uniform Crime Report is the index that the FBI and the United States Department of Justice look at to determine, you know, the citizenship or lack of citizenship for people that commit crimes. There's not even a box there anymore. So that box is gone. And a lot of state laws, if not the majority of state laws, prohibit police officers from asking a person if they're in this country legally or
well,
not.
Exactly.
And that's done deliberately to hide the statistics from the American people.
Well, and my question again, as it always is, to what end? I mean, who benefits from this and who suffers from this? When you have the amount of people that are being released, and let's just take one county, Franklin County in Ohio, that since November has released 29 people that had ICE holds on them that are sex offenders, that are violent criminals, drug dealers, all types of different crimes. And you know, they don't tell ICE when they're going to release them, so they just release them so the ICE can't be there. But guess what? They don't tell the public either.
No.
And you are an unsuspecting person. And I could say, and there's no point, you know, because literally we could be here probably for hours and hours straight if we were to start saying all of those types of crimes that happen because of ICE releases and that they will not hold them. And the thing is, they're not, there's a lot of sex crimes happening, okay? And they're... One was really bothered me recently, which was the lady, I think she was 91 or 94, and I think New Jersey, and this guy got released, and he raped this 94-year-old woman on an icy sidewalk or area and left her there, and she was there half-dressed for hours, and she ultimately died. But you know, this guy should have been in jail. He shouldn't have been in jail. He should have been out of this country. That was one example. But then they don't just rape 94-year-old women. They rape 6-year-olds. They do all kinds of different things. And I just can't see how any of our lawmakers could make a law that favors the criminal over the law-abiding citizen and over our children.
Well, you know, Linda, if people from the progressive left that would listen to you say something like that, they would call you a racist. They would say that you're anti-immigration.
I'm anti-crime, Ron.
Well, no, I get it, Linda. Believe me, I get it. Both with careers in law enforcement, and I think everybody in law enforcement understands it too, but. You know, it's so hard to fight this battle when you get a state like, you know, California, where they actually, where the governor signed a bill passed by the legislature that prohibits law enforcement agencies from cooperating with the Department of Homeland Security and ICE.
I think that's just obscene.
And I really, you know, your comment, you know, that you always say really resonates with me, and that is to what end? Why would you do that? Well, of course, it's a power thing. It's a power thing by the Democrats, and they want as many illegal aliens in this country as possible because they tend to, you know, they want to get the vote for those people.
Well,
and they're going to vote Democratic.
I wonder how powerful that 94-year-old woman and the 6-year-old felt.
You know, I totally get it, but the unfortunate thing is they don't care. And when you talk to people that are open borders advocates and you bring this stuff up, they don't want to hear it. They deflect and redirect the conversation. I mean, I've had a number of these conversations trying to have, you know, highbrow, high-level, you know, articulate conversations with these people, and because I want to get in their head. I mean, I want to know why you would do this, to what end. So who does it help, like you always say? And so they turn around and they, you know, the best defense is a good offense. And so, you know, you get called a racist or you get, you know, accused of, you know, being phobic about illegal aliens, you know, and then obviously it becomes a person of color thing. So, but the fact of the matter is that that's a serious problem in the United States. And I don't know whether we're going to be able to solve this problem. I think probably President Trump is making some good inroads into trying to get a lid on this thing. But it's just absolutely unfortunate. And it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Well, and one thing that President Trump had done is he had said that people can refuse, cities or states can refuse to have refugees come into their area.
Right.
And he was limiting the amount of refugees into the country at all.
And as a matter of fact, Governor Greg Abbott, our wonderful governor here in Texas, said that in Texas, they were not going to accept refugees like that.
Right. So now, of course, the left sued, and a federal left-leaning judge said that can't stand, that he can't say that everybody has to accept refugees. And excuse me, that's not true at all. You know, the people have rights as well. It's not just the illegals and the refugees that have rights. People that live in areas have rights as well. And I'm tired of those being trampled on for the minority of people that choose to break our laws. So, I'm sure that there'll be another lawsuit, and I'm sure that that will go
to the United States Supreme Court. Sure.
But just my point is, I notice a big uptick in these crimes, and since more and more departments are not working with ICE, ICE is starting to sue some of them,
and they should,
and starting to really make some inroads and complaints. So they're not sitting back and taking it like I think that they were for a while. But of course, they were pretty overwhelmed when we had all those people coming over the border. And now that is
they're starting
lessening.
To catch their breath a little bit now. Right?
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is that President Trump and the Department of Homeland Security want to build 270 more miles of fence, and they want to use drug money that
right.
they have
set aside for counter drug
exactly.
Operations.
And
to
I
do
think
that.
That is amazingly good.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense because they have the money earmarked for counter drug operations. But boy, what could be better counter drug operations than building another 268 or 270 miles?
That's
more.
A long way along
right.
the border, and because there's a lot of areas that are very hard to cross And a wall doesn't work, but in the areas where it works, it does work, and it has made such a difference. And also, Mexico is increasingly helping with this problem, and now they have said that they're going to block people that are trying to come from Honduras.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up, because several thousand people, this was just recent, several thousand people are getting together to, form another wagon train, so to speak, to make it up through the United States. And when we talk to Mexicans that we know in Mexico, they tell us, remember we even did a couple of shows in Mexico, and they tell us, boy, we wish we would have done in Mexico what you guys are doing at the border, because we are getting all these people coming up from southern Mexico, from Central America, from Africa, from the Middle East, coming up through Mexico, and it's creating some real problems for us. Problems with crime, problems, environmental problems it's creating, and also crime problems. And they come in and they just inundate some of these border cities. I mean, look at Tijuana and all the problems that they caused in Tijuana. I mean, I think that was a real wake-up call when they realized that they're getting tens of thousands of illegal aliens camping out, in downtown Tijuana.
Yeah.
So yeah, they agree. Yeah, we need to have a wall. And the Mexicans that we know, that we're friends with and colleagues with, they actually they like President Trump. And you never hear that from the mainstream media. They completely hide that from you.
Well, I'll
you know,
you
they respect him. They respect him.
Story that I haven't told you, because I just got back from a trip. And one of the things that I did on that trip is, I work with some people in Mexico who supply clients of ours that are in Mexico that work for American
right.
companies, okay? And it's very hard to do business there. And
well, so let's discuss that for a second, because I think, some people don't know why it's difficult to do trade in Mexico.
Well, they have much different rules than we have, and their prices for the same thing. Let's just take something simple like a coffee mug, promotional product. Their prices are far, far higher. Their prices for wearables, so polo shirt, that's a T-shirt, those have much higher than what we're used to paying here.
Oh, in the United States? And are you talking about what we're used to paying from other countries, or
no, what we're used to paying in the United States
from our laborers,
from where, well, a lot of our product comes from China.
Okay.
And I'm sure that a lot of theirs do too, but the government in Mexico, apparently they put some taxes or something on it.
Some
I'm not
tariffs?
Really sure.
Okay.
But how that works, but then they also have a lot of regulation. So I can't really bring a lot of things into the country, so I have to buy it in the country
right.
and have it shipped in country to the client. But anyway, that's
I was just interested. I mean, just wanted to know
but
that.
But the thing is that you know, I had about an hour-long meeting with the president of that company in Mexico, and very, very nice man, you know, trying to work out some of the kinks in doing business. And it was very, very informative. And there is no, just no rancor between us and them. You know,
and the media keeps suggesting that that's the case.
Yeah.
So you're finding, just like we find, that that's a bunch of malarkey.
Yeah, they love Americans. It's the people that, it's the criminals that don't love them, you know, and we don't love them right back. So, you know, but anyway, that's not true. And by the way, you know, we're going to be heading there very shortly and spend a little R&R time in Mexico and see all the people that we love down there. And hopefully, you know, we can get somebody behind a microphone and, you know, have a conversation about where we are now, because it's been really interesting for me to follow that path of where we were before this president was elected and then right after he was elected. And, you know, now that he's been there a little while and, you know, now that NAFTA's getting passed and all these different interesting
things. Well, no, not
things.
NAFTA, USMCA.
I'm sorry, USMCA.
Okay, we're getting rid of NAFTA.
Yeah. And by the way, what I was explained is that a lot of these things that I thought it would change, it's not going to change on the Mexico side.
Oh, really? Because that was my next question
to
you.
I'm sure it will change some things, and I don't know all the details, but what I needed changed wasn't going to change. So anyway, interesting conversations about, you know, Mexico. That being said, I would like to see our law enforcement agencies cooperate fully with ICE. I would like to see them work as a partnership and get these criminals out of this country and not allow them to hurt Americans anymore.
Yeah, and you know, just a brief mention about some of the stuff that's going on now with bail, no bail. You know, they're tossing out no bail, and they're tossing out bail.
Right.
Okay. So you know, so a lot of these people under this new, you know, social justice, restorative justice malarkey, we're getting legislatures and city councils and county commissioners that are basically legislating to get rid of bail, all right? Because it says, well, bail unfairly affects people
it's
of color.
And
well, guess what?
I mean, everything is, right?
They shouldn't look at color. They shouldn't look at socioeconomics. They need to look at recidivism. And they need to look at the quality of the crime. In other words, how serious was this crime? And what is the offender's potential of reoffending, and what threat to those people do they cause the community, and take the whole damn race thing out of it. And I think that if they did that, we'd be safer, because we're certainly not safer now.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Well, Well, I know you just came back from the PPAI convention, the Promotional Products Association International in Las Vegas, and you were there for a few days, and I've gone so many times, and you had such a great time this time that I really regret not going. And you got to meet a couple of heavy hitters there, didn't you?
Well, that was the best part, because the rest of me is sore and I feel like a truck ran over me.
I mean,
it's a lot of walking.
You know, and I know we've seen it before at Mandalay Bay when it was there, and I don't think I've ever walked that much in my life in a day. Okay,
yeah. Well, it's still at Mandalay Bay, so. Yeah.
So how many people go to that, and what's that all about?
Well, it's about six. I honestly don't know how many people. I read something about 16,000. I know that it was wall-to-wall people, and if you like being at a place that's wall-to-wall people and bumping into everybody, that's the place you want to go. But, you know, there's a lot to be learned.
Well, what's it all about?
Well, no, it's just the promotional products show where you get to see all of the products in person. And, you know, I mean, for me, I've been doing this so very long that most of it is no longer really interesting. It's every day, but you get those gems that you would never have gotten unless you go, and you'll see those, that one thing or that five things that are just like, wow, that's really amazing. So that's the thing. But what I did before that is, you know, my business, just my co-business owners in my business, they have a meeting. And at our personal private meeting, we had the privilege of having Steve Wozniak there, and he spoke just to us. And it wasn't so much, he didn't really speak to the audience like a speaker stands on a stage. Somebody was interviewing him. And I'll tell you, I had no idea what to expect, Ron. And I just enjoyed that so much because, first of all, this is the guy that invented the computer. I mean, he is Mr. Apple, right?
The Woz.
He's the Woz. And he's such a nice man. He's a very unassuming, down to earth. There's no pretentiousness about this man. And you know that's how I am. That's how you are. And I love that.
And he's probably a billionaire, right?
I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
I can tell you that there's no love loss for him with Steve Jobs at all. Steve, I think Steve did the wrong things and really abused that relationship and took him to the cleaners. But that being said...
But I heard the guy that did the lion's share of the work as far as inventing and had the ideas...
It wasn't the lion's share. It was all.
Steve Wozniak did that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Steve Jobs knew nothing of that. He never touched anything to make anything. He didn't know the first thing about it.
Wow.
He was more the guy that was supposed to be the marketing guy.
Okay, I get it.
He took a lot of credit, but... Steve Wozniak did the work. And the thing that's fascinating about him to me is that you have to read his book, I Woz.
Well, what's the name of his book?
I Woz, W-O-Z.
I Woz. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, as a little kid, his dad was an engineer. His dad worked in a super secret space or aircraft program, but he was a first class engineer, and he taught Woz from when he was, you know, like 4 years old, how to be interested in these things. And Woz just took to it like a duck to water. He loved the electronics. He loved what they could do. And he wanted his dad to explain, you know, how does a light bulb work? And how does this work? And how does that work? And his dad rightfully explained to him, you know, don't look at what it can do. Look at how it does it. And then think of what you can do with it. And, I mean, what an amazing mentor he had in his dad. He was not a guy that was out there looking to build a company. He was just kind of fooling
around. An
inventor.
An inventor. Okay.
Yeah. And he met up with Steve Jobs several times over a number of years, starting when one of them was 16 years old. I don't remember which one. One was, Woz was 16 and Jobs was 20. And Jobs kept saying, you know, we need to have a company. But they didn't know how to make a company, and they didn't know what to do, and they had no money. And so Woz started building these little boards, not computers, but little boards.
Are you talking about circuit boards?
I guess circuit boards. Sure. I don't know the first thing about electronics. That's why I say read the book, because it's really interesting. But he would build these, and then they would sell them. Like, you know, he'd build maybe 50, and he'd sell them to some store down the street, and they'd give him cash, and then they could build 50 more, because he was saying that it was the chips that were the most expensive thing. So his story is interesting, but what I got really a big kick out of him is you can still see that little kid in him, and he's a big prankster, which I didn't know. He spent his life, and he told about a lot of the pranks he pulled on friends, and they really are hilarious. I'll just give you two of them. So one was when he was in school, and you know, you have the locker, the banks of lockers. He built a metronome. He just took a regular metronome. He didn't build it. He took a regular metronome, but he programmed it. So he put it in this kid's locker. And so the kid goes to his locker, and there's this tick, tick, tick. So, you know, security comes and everybody comes.
They think there's a bomb in the locker.
Well, he also programmed it so that when you open the locker, it would start ticking way faster. So the bomb squad comes, and they get this thing, and they take it out, and they blow it up in the grass at the school. And then another one was, I guess he did a lot of things. When he was in college, and he was in a dorm, and at that time, they didn't have too much color TVs. They had black and white TVs. And by the way, all the first games, like if you remember Atari and the first
were
games,
all in black
they were
and
all
white.
In black and white.
Sure.
He is the guy that added the color.
No way.
Yes. He is the guy that figured out and added the color. And that was in the Apple II computer. And that is where we got gaming that had color. Anyway, so he's in the dorm, and they had black and white TVs, but in this one room, this one guy's room, he had a color TV, which was like, oh my gosh, that was the coolest thing. So all the guys would go in that room, and they'd watch TV. They'd watch games, you know, like sports things. And so they'd be watching, and Woz invented this little thing that looked like a pencil, so nobody would know that he did it. And when he pushed something, it made the TV go bonkers or blurry, you know. And everybody would go, oh my God. So what do guys do, Ron, when that happens with a TV? What
well, they
do
hit
they
it.
They hit it.
They hit it.
Exactly.
Oh, hit it. Make it work.
So basically, over time, he had these guys trained, because they never knew that he did it. That if they hit it, it would stop. But then if they stop, you know, he would make it stop and go. So then he got to where, like, he would get them in all these awkward positions. Like one guy's up on a ladder, touching the TV with his other hand up, and that's how it works. And then if he would take his hand off, actually the TV
then
would work fine.
He'd make the TV
go bonkers again, and the guy would have to be standing there. And he got them in all these crazy positions over time to make the TV work. And he just did funny things to people. And, you know, he's such an unimposing genius. And I got the privilege of having a private cocktail party with he and a few other people, and you know, got a chance to speak to him. And you know, I was very, very impressed, and I love the humanity of that man.
And I think you just probably answered my question, but what was the takeaway that you got from Wozniak about what made him successful?
He loved what he did, and that he stressed that. He says, don't do things for money. I never did this for money. The money came, but it wasn't about the money. It was about the adventure. And I so can see that, and I so agree with it. And if everybody had that mindset, I mean, the world would just be so much happier, because he just truly loved then, from the time he was 4 years old, and loves still creating and inventing things.
So what's he doing now, Linda?
I don't know. You know, that question never came up. And I am going to read his book and see what else I can learn about him. But I really don't know. I think he's doing a lot of speaking, because I believe he's out of Apple. But you know, there's so many things I could say about what he did to make that little board that he first made into an actual computer. You know, and when he spoke with Microsoft, and Microsoft wanted, you know, his work, and he's saying no, you know, and they ended up doing the whole thing in the Apple. And the thing is, how should a computer work? His feeling is that a computer, even today, should be very intuitive to how you want it, what you want it to do. So the computer, if you do something wrong, it should say, were you trying to do this, maybe?
Oh, cool.
And, you know, that's his whole idea is just making it easier for people. So I love that.
Well, okay, so six steps closer to Kevin Bacon. All right, I'll tell you the Wozniak story that I have, because not very many people know this, but Steve Wozniak went to a college in Cupertino called De Anza College. And I think that's one of the reasons why Apple's campus is in the city of Cupertino, California. And while I was a police detective, I was an instructor at De Anza College for 13 years. And he was a phenomenal philanthropist to De Anza College. And he got all the teachers Apple computers for free and free upgrades every other year, and donated a tremendous amount of money. As a matter of fact, I believe the Learning Center was probably built in large part to the efforts of Steve Wozniak. So he's a huge hero at De Anza College, but not too many people know that he went to De Anza. Okay.
Well, I did mention that to him, and he was very impressed that I knew that.
Did you mention my name, Linda?
No, of course not.
No, I wasn't there at the same time he was there. I came after him.
But he said most people don't know that about him, and he was very, very impressed. And in fact, he gave me his private email, and I will never give it to anybody ever, wow. ever. But, you know, just a fascinating guy.
Well, listen, I want to talk to you about another fascinating guy whose name is Brian Moran. And he's the author of that extremely popular book for business people called The 12-Week Year. What did you learn about Brian? Because I know you guys had some personal time together. I know
we did.
You went to the seminar that he taught, but you guys, you and Brian and his wife, I understand, had a real connection. So tell me about that, because I'm fascinated.
Well, he's a very fascinating guy, and probably one of the best speeches I've ever heard that people could really benefit their life from. And I'll have to just say in a nutshell, and we're going to have more time, because Brian Moran is going to come on to Talking While Married and spend an hour with us.
And he's going to come out to the ranch, is what I understand, right?
Well, we hope so.
Okay.
But he is definitely going to come on to Talking While Married and talk about his book, which, by the way, is a huge, huge best-selling book. But in a nutshell, Ron, and there's no way I can do this in 3 minutes, but if you take your year and you set yourself a goal, and by the way, everybody doesn't even know what a goal is, and he teaches you what a goal is, you give yourself so much time that people kind of cram everything into the last minute, or they give up at the beginning because it's too much, too far away. So his theory is to make your year 12 weeks, and you set your goal. So let's just say, here's the one that everybody uses. It's the simplest one. You could do anything in business. You could do anything in your personal life. You could do anything in your marriage. You could do whatever you want to do. But let's just say, because it's easy, that you want to lose weight. Okay. So you don't say, I want to lose 60 pounds this year. You say, I want to lose 15 pounds in those 12 weeks, right? Now, what is the most important things that I can do to lose weight? So then you would figure out all of the options of those things that you could do. Could you join Weight Watchers? Could you, have a friend help? Could you eat less calories? Could you do exercise? Whatever. You might have 100 things. And then you pick the top one or two or three of those, and those are going to be your tactics. And then you take those 12 weeks and you take those tactics and you kind of say, what am I going to do every day to achieve those tactics? And you put that down in writing. They actually have a free program that you can do online. And you put the tactics down. And every day you hold yourself accountable. But he doesn't like to say the word accountable. He says you hold yourself capable, because you're capable, and that's what the goal is, for people to be the best them and realize the best that they could be and get there. Because most of us in life fall short of that, and we give up on things. And I just thought it was so easy. And by the way, I know people in my industry who have done this for a year. They did the 12 weeks four times, right? It's a quarter. And I cannot tell you how much their revenues and their businesses increased. It was dramatic.
What do you think his secret to success has been?
I think that what I see is that he didn't give up on how he wanted to make people's businesses and lives better, because he is a professional. I don't know if a coach is the word, but it was coming up with how do we get people to be their best. And he and another gentleman came up with this whole idea, and it just really, really works. And I am definitely going to use it, and I'm definitely going to tell you all about it and show you how it's going to work, because, you know, we actually have some things that we've been struggling with, and how to get so many things done, you know, in a day, because our days are so full. And I think it's going to really help. So we're going to actually hear from Brian Moran soon together. And by the way, his wife, Judy, is also an author, and she's going to spend some time with us as well, because that is a fascinating lady. And you're going to hear more from her on America Out Loud.
That's fantastic. I can hardly wait to be involved in that interview process. Brian Moran, the 12-week year.
Yep.